So here we go. I guess we're doing this. Our first RCPA podcast. We got Mike, a.k.a. Blender Boy, Dwayne, a.k.a. Badger, and Hans Andreessen.
Honey.
This is our guest.
Honey Badger. Don't forget the honey. That makes me that makes me sweet.
Gotcha. The sweetness of the badger.
That's right.
So let's go over what has Dwayne done this week or the past couple weeks for, you know, flying projects, that kind of stuff.
I pretty much have spent the time in bed. As most of you know, I've gotten the flu, and it has been a come and go thing for about the past week and a half. So I haven't touched any of my projects. I got quite a few sitting here, one of them thanks to Hans. Really not much as far as flying, like I said, the past week and a half, 2 weeks. It's been crappy since the flu struck our house. It went from my son to my daughter to me to my wife and then back to me again. So,
I'm pretty sure I know where that flu came from. It's got to be that orange monster transmitter that you bought from Hobby King. That's about the time that you started getting sick, you know?
I was wondering if it was going to be brought up. And yes, it did come from Hong Kong. So I'm wondering if there's either some SARS in there or swine flu or bird flu or something. But it is quite possible.
As it is. Oh, I wonder if you've, have you burnt any brain cells using that thing yet?
I don't know, but it seems now when I go to the bathroom, I don't need a bathroom light because everything just glows around me. So I have no clue.
Nice. Are you glowing orange like the transmitter?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay. Give it time, I guess, huh?
Yeah, more kind of like I'm slowly melding into the transmitter itself. I'm kind of doing the becoming one with the machine, so to speak. So.
Gotcha. But you have had a chance to use it, right?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
So what do you think so far?
Overall, I mean, it's really nice. The menus are a little tough to get used to, especially your model selection, because you can name your models, but when you go to choose them, it only shows you number options. So you have to have written down somewhere like model 1 is your Polecat, model 2 is your Pitts. But other than that, I mean, once you get past that, it's easy to program. It's easy to set up your expo. I know we got our expo fans out here.
Yeah.
You could do your endpoint adjustments. I mean, overall, programming, it's really easy. I had a Futaba, was it 6J, and I would say it's on par with that as far as ease of programming. Quality, the case, it feels solid. The switch is solid. They stop. There's no play in the switches. No play in the sticks or the gimbals. The throttle is smooth as can be. The only issue that I had is the battery hatch doesn't. It stays on, but it's really loose. So I put a piece of clear electrical tape on it, and that's the only issue that I can see with it so far. And as far as flying my planes, it's dead on. It's like instantaneous. There's no delay. Feels connected to the plane, very connected. Better than my DX5. I have to admit that. Way better than a DX5.
Yeah, the DX5 is fairly cheap. For it, so does that bind to it? Binds the Spectrum and the orange receivers, of course.
Yes.
Gotcha. And are you using the orange receivers on your plane or the Spectrum?
My Polecat has the built-in ultra micro Spectrum in it. And my other plane has my Pitts has the orange receiver.
Yeah.
And it's with either or, it's just the same. There's no difference as far as the binding, as far as the range, and as far as just the connectability. You just feel connected to the airplane with it. It just feels really nice.
Nice. So you're getting a lot of use out and enjoying it better than your other one, huh?
Not a whole lot of use yet, like I said, with the flu and stuff and in our weather. But the three times I did use it, I'm happy. I flew it one evening. It was getting dark and it was overcast, and my wife could see it from about 3 blocks away. I mean, when it lights up, you can see it.
so the whole receiver lights up then, or the transmitter, the whole transmitter.
When the display lights up, it kind of gives the whole transmitter a glow. It kind of gives a back glow to the whole transmitter. So it's actually lighting up the LCD. Yeah, it gives it like little back glow orange to it.
Well, at least you'll never lose it, right?
What's that? Exactly.
Yeah, you'll never lose it because
I was thinking of putting a set of 20s on it and some of the spinning rims on it with that nice neon glow. And
there you go. Yeah, you can pimp it out.
That's what I was thinking.
Pimp my transmitter, right? You can start up a new show.
There we go. Maybe we could have an offshoot on this podcast.
Yeah.
But overall, I'd say I'm happy with it. For $90, including shipping, I'm happy with it. And I actually got it within 10 days from Hong Kong over Christmas, which I'm completely amazed.
Yeah, that was my next question, how long it took you to get it. So that's not too bad.
No.
So it's definitely an option for people looking to save a little bit of money on a transmitter, huh?
Exactly. And who like Spectrum, but don't have the full $150, $160. Granted, there's no FCC sticker on it, like you guys have pointed out numerous times.
Yeah.
But no motherships have contacted me yet, so I don't think it's putting out too much. The other option is, too, it has dual transmitting rates, whereas you can have it for European standard or American standard. So if you're in France where they still limit the wattage, you could have the lower wattage. So if you are throwing up and down your neighbor's garage door, I guess you could lower the power and not worry about it.
No, nice. I didn't know that came with that.
Yep.
So it sounds like it's doing all right for all the flack that you got for it.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Like I said, I got it mainly to bind with my Ultra Micros, and it worked perfect with my Polecat, worked with my Pits. So for what I fly, I'm fine with it. Yes, I would be leery putting a more expensive plane, a larger plane on it until I had a lot more flights on it to make sure, especially if there's more people around to see what kind of interference, if it does anything. But for myself and my little park with my little guys, I'm very comfortable and secure in using it. I'm happy with it.
Nice. Does it have the ability to do range checks and all that?
Yes, it does. It has a range check. It has a trainer port on the back.
So you can use it with a simulator and all that?
Yes.
Have you done any range checks on it at all just to test it out, see what type of range check you're getting?
To be honest, I was too excited just to fly my Polecat because it had been so long, and then we finally got a break in the weather, so I just flew it, so I didn't do the range check. But I will once I get to start flying more, once the weather breaks, I will definitely do a range check before I fly anything more.
Yeah, then maybe next time on the podcast, next show, we can go over the range check and see how it all went and see what your findings are on it.
And it will be the plane that I won from Hans. It will be flying that. So I will, once I get that plane built, I will be giving her, it will be used on that plane. So we'll know how it works with that too.
Cool. How is that plane coming along? You haven't gotten too much done yet or?
Nothing. The other morning I actually woke up, I heard a big crash, and I've talked to you earlier. I have cats, and I put it up on top of a bookshelf that's probably about 8 foot tall, and all the foam was on and behind the bookshelf and down on the floor. Somehow the cats got up there, and nothing got damaged, but the plane still hasn't been put together just because I've been so sick. So,
yeah, understandable, and plus it's probably pretty cold where you are.
Yeah, and windy. The main thing is the wind. I don't mind the cold. But we, in the wintertime, we just get constant winds that just come in out of nowhere.
Yeah. Unlike Hans and I, we're pretty cold. And I don't know about Hans, but we don't have much wind where I'm at. But it's been in the single digits and, you know, barely getting above 20 degrees for the last month. So it's been miserably cold and lots of snow for us here.
Yeah, we got about 3 inches our last big blizzard, and that was it. So that's what we've had all season.
Oh, wow. That's about it, huh?
That's it.
All right. Well, let's move on over to Hanson and see what Hanson's been up to and what type of stuff he's flying and what got him into the hobby.
Oh, well, I don't know where to start. I got my first plane probably 10 years ago, your basic Nitro Trainer, and then just kind of went nuts from there and bought everything. I want everything. I fly everything. It's the, ooh, shiny, I need one of those. And you fly it a few times, and then you, oh, that's shiny, I need one of those too. So,
amen.
I've got everything. I've got more flying wings than anything, and the faster they go, the better. But other than that, I've got gliders, I've got 3D planes, I've got the wings, I've got helicopters, I've got a couple of quadcopters now. I'm right in the middle of putting together a Sabre 47 Balsa profile plane right now. I had to argue with Value Hobby a little bit. It got damaged in shipping by the Universal Package Smashers, if you can believe that. Somebody, I think they've got a 400-pound lady hired to tap dance on every other package that comes through. I don't know, but three of the ribs were broken in the wing when I got it, so I had to do surgery on the wing, repair it, and then start putting it together. I've got redid all the control surfaces. They had CA hinges. It was pre-hinged for or pre-cut for CA hinges. I pitched those in the garbage, put the Robart hinge points in it because they don't break like CA hinges do. Got all the servos in it and went to start putting control rods on the other day and spread the first clevis to connect it to the surface, and the pin fell out of it. Their hardware was such high quality. So I've got to round up some M3 clevises, and then I can finish the plane up and fly it.
And you've got the gasser motor for that, right?
Yeah, I got the new 10cc Evolution gas motor for that.
Now, what's the break-in process for those? I hear they're pretty extensive for a gas motor.
It's a, reading the directions, it's about 4 tanks of fuel to break it in, but 4 8-ounce tanks of gas, that's 2 hours in the air.
2 hours total or 2 hours?
2 hours total. It'll should fly right close to 30 minutes on a 8-ounce tank.
Oh, wow. That's a nice flight time.
Yeah, that's the big thing with this versus electric. Basically, what their break-in procedure was full throttle and just sit there and fly Cuban 8 continuously, because you're loading the motor, getting it hot, climbing up, and then it cools coming down, and you just sit there and do that over and over, and that's supposedly how you break it in. So I'll.
So it's not even close to like a nitro.
What, Mike?
So it's not like breaking in a nitro motor.
Yeah, that's about how I break a nitro motor in too. So
really?
Yeah, I fly them like they're gonna get flown.
Yeah, I've always taken them easy.
Go ahead. My question on it, you said it flies for 30 minutes on gas. How does your receiver battery, how long does it last as opposed to a tank of gas? Is there a concern, or do you have enough time on that?
I haven't even flown the thing yet. It isn't completely assembled, so I don't honestly know yet.
Because I know when I had a gasser, it said like 10 minutes on the receiver battery, and I'm just wondering, would that be an issue with that plane, or does it have a larger battery? Or
I've got 2S1100 LIFE packs sitting here. I'm going to run 6 volts direct to the servo, so I've got high-voltage servos in it. According to the manual that came with the motor, I'm trying to remember. The motor uses, I want to say, 300 milliamps an hour at full throttle. So I don't know, I'll fly it 3 or 4 flights and see how many milliamps I put back in the battery, and then I can just kind of decide from there how many flights to go between recharges.
Okay.
So when you say the motor is pulling milliamps, is it the spark plug pulling the power from the receiver battery?
Yeah, there's an ignition module on them, just like a...
Go ahead.
Well, there's just an ignition module on them, just like a car or a truck would have. I mean, it's a little tiny gas motor, so it takes X amount of milliamps per hour to run the ignition.
Including all of your other servos for the ailerons and elevator rudder.
Yep. Yep, plus ailerons, elevator, receiver, whatever. So the battery gets twice as much load on it, basically. I called Horizon Hobby and talked to Texas Port specifically about that, and I asked them, is it okay to run the receiver battery and the ignition battery? Can you run one battery for them both? And they said, yeah, that's fine. And I'd always heard you had to use a separate ignition battery, but they say you don't need to.
Would it be beneficial too to just, you know, save more time on batteries?
Well, I want to see what the plane ends up weighing. With the gasser, you're paying a weight penalty anyway, so I'm going to have to see what it weighs, see if I want to run dual batteries or go to a bigger single one, or just what I want to do as far as that goes.
That sounds really cool. I like the idea of having an ignition module. I like that.
Yeah, well, and the other cool thing about it, the 10cc Evolution, I penciled it out. I mean, it's right at $200 for the motor. It's supposed to be equivalent to an OS55AX as far as power goes, or right close to it. And based on flight times you get with nitro versus gasoline, I figure by the time I make it through the first gallon of gas, I'm actually money ahead versus buying the nitro motor, even though the gas engine is more expensive.
Oh, yeah. Nitro fuel is like $30 a gallon now.
Yeah, it is.
And if you don't have a local hobby shop like me, you have to pay for shipping, and there's always an additional shipping charge on it, too.
Yeah, that's the bad part. The shipping is just horrible. Terry and I actually buy 3 or 4 cases at a time and have it shipped to us, and that saves us a bunch of money doing that.
Good. So that's about it that you've got going on.
Yeah, that's about all I've got going on, so I guess we can hear a little bit about you, Mike.
All right. Well, as you guys know, I'm the Heli Guy, a.k.a. Blender Boy. I've been coined that moniker by Michael on the in the group. So I don't think I'll ever live that name down. I've kind of just gone with it, and it's kind of stuck.
But haven't you also gone to – you've gone to Fixed Wing also, haven't you?
Yeah, I've gotten a couple of airplanes that I've been, you know, buying here and there lately. And I actually started out flying airplanes a long time ago, you know, 10 years or so ago, but I didn't really stick with it. And it was just, you know, trainer stuff and that kind of stuff. But a couple years ago, I got my first real helicopter, and it was just downhill from there. I just got so addicted and can't stop buying helis. Even though I buy planes, I usually end up taking them to the field and buy the helis, and the plane sit in the car. But I do want to start getting back into planes a little bit more and trying some new stuff out with them and get me a nice ball for the 3D plane. I'm sure you guys have seen my posts, you know, seeing which one's better. We can't decide between the AJ Slick or the Precision Aerobatics Katana. Still leaning towards the Katana, so we shall see during the springtime or summer after I quit buying helis I might buy another plane.
Just based on the name, I'd go with the Katana. I've always had a soft spot for that.
Yeah, it just sounds cooler than AJ's Flick, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And plus it suits me better, too, because I like the green and white version of it. And the downside for me for the AJ's Flick is you're just very limited on color schemes. Whereas the Precision Aerobatics, they've got multiple color schemes and stuff like that. So you can, you know, I won't have the exact same plane as everybody else. Because that's the other issue. I do fly at the same local field as Andrew Jeske, so there are a bunch of AJ Slicks out there already, including Andrew Jeske himself. So if I show up out there with, you know, an AJ Slick, I'm going to be the same as everybody else because everybody's got them there. And it's like, who's playing who? You know what I mean?
That's why I like the plane that I got from Hans, because it's solid white and I can paint it. And I'm going with that green and white and purple scheme also. I really like that. Not the same exact scheme, but the same color combination. I like that green, white, purple.
Yeah, it's really nice. And that little Edge 540 QQ that with that same paint scheme, I've taken it outside a few times and flown it out in my front yard. And that it really shows up really well. For that small of a plane, it's only a 24-inch wingspan. And, you know, I've gotten it way out there and way up there, and you can just see it. It's really bright and vibrant. I really like those colors. It's got some good contrast against the, you know, the blues and the whites of the sky.
I know you're still introducing yourself, but eventually I'd like to hear a review on that plane because that was one of my Christmas options.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't got to fly it much. I've only got, you know, maybe two flights on it or so. So let me get some more time on it and get it out and do some stuff. I've done a little bit of stuff with it, a little bit of hovering and knife edges and stuff. And I'll leave a little bit for a review on it for, you know, a couple of weeks. And we'll do a review on that and talk about it a little bit more and go over some features of it. Because it is a really cool plane. And, you know, if you're into planes, then... You know, it's definitely a good option if you have Spectrum radios.
Great.
So,
you guys talking about color, I'm one of those psychotic people that doesn't care what color the plane is. It can be solid white, solid black, whatever. I just fly it.
Yeah. I'm the same way, too. I mean, I don't usually use it as a reference while I'm flying. I buy things based on looks half the time. You know what I mean? So if it looks good and if it performs just as good as it looks, then I'm happy. And that's half the reason why I bought the Goblin 700, because based on looks alone, I couldn't pass it up. When it first came out, I knew nothing about it. I just saw it and I was like, wow, that is a great looking heli. I've got to have it. And it flies, and all the mechanics on it and everything, the drivetrain and everything, is just as good as how it looks, and to my eyes, because a lot of people think the Goblin is ugly, so I think it's awesome.
I think the Goblin is the best-looking helicopter you can buy, personally.
Yeah, me too, but a lot of people, you know, the traditional style people, the old-school people, they like Pod and Boom, they don't like that crazy alien look, and it's too far out of the box for some people. You know what I mean?
That's how I am. I like the MD-30s, 530 style. I like the scale helis. I like the ones that look like something that's flying out there in the sky right now. That's my whole thing. Even with airplanes, too. I like planes that I see at an air show. I like to fly how I see real full-scale airplanes fly. I mean, I appreciate 3D flyers. I'm amazed by their thumbs, but... I just like seeing what you see at an air show, just basic aerobatics, the Cuban 8s, the loops, the rolls, things like that, the flat spins. When you start getting into the hovering and all that, it loses all reality for me. Plus, yeah. I know the fact I can never do it, so that's why I get jealous. And
and see, I'm the polar opposite to you, Dwayne, when it comes to that. The planes I want something that nobody else has.
See, that's where I like to go with the paint scheme, the look. I don't care if it's an Edge 530, the Edge 540 like I got from you. I want that to be painted so it looks different from everybody else's. I don't care if the profile is the same. I don't care if it's the same plane as everybody else. I'll put it into the color scheme to make it look different. That's how I am. I just...
Yeah. That's like the P-51 Mustang's one of my very favorite planes, but you see it...
Oh, agreed.
You see a dozen of them at every fun fly you go to, so I just... I'll never own one, just for that reason.
Well, I like our one member, though, who does them in who always does the P-51s and German schemes. Now, that's... I like that idea.
Yeah.
How he does, like, the captured German paint schemes, or and he's doing the Zero. I saw he was doing a Zero with German markings on it now. I like that idea. I really, really like that. You can take a plane that everybody has, and just from simple paint or decals, and it could be one of a million. I like that idea.
Yeah, different is good.
Yep, exactly. That's what makes those people, right?
And that's what makes this hobby so great.
Yeah, there's something for everybody.
Yep, because not everybody's into the same things, and I'm probably, you know, I know I'm the minority on the heli side in our group, so, but it's okay.
Well,
I'll still pop you plankers every now and then.
Yeah. I'm the minority flying wing guy. Most people don't do them, so.
Yep. It's pretty diverse.
I'm the minority orange transmitter guy. There's one of our other members has one, and he's pretty happy with it too. But
yeah, that was the guy that lives in Texas, right?
Oh, I can't remember his name. Oh, I wish. I feel so bad, but I darn it, I should have had a list of what I wanted to talk about.
Talking about the orange receivers earlier, quite honestly, I've had less problems with them than the real Spectrum ones.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. We was talking about that AR-6255 earlier. I had a Great Plains Siren Hotliner that had the 6255 in it because it's a carbon fiber fuselage.
Yeah.
And that plane, I ran a 4S2200 in it, and I could do a dozen climb outs with it and just point it straight up. It's going straight up 60, 70 miles an hour, climb up, shut the power off, and glide around for 3 or 4 minutes and then do another climb out. And anyway, year and a half ago, probably, I'd done one climb out, and I'd been gliding around doing loops and just goofing off, slow, relaxed, flying with it, and came flying by where me and Terry were standing, and it just signed off, and had to sit there and watch it hit the ground. Nothing I could do. And I'd only done one climb out on the pack, so when I got to the plane after it crashed, all four cells in the battery were still at like 4.15 volts, and only way I can explain it is it locked out.
Was that the crash you were telling me about yesterday with out in Alpine with Terry?
Yeah, I had a multiplex Blizzard hotliner. I have bad luck with hotliners. Anyway, I was climbing up 600-700 feet with it, pointing it straight at the ground, and pulling up 20-30 feet off the ground, ripping down the runway, pointing it straight up, doing it again. And I'd done that half a dozen times with the plane and yanked on the elevator, and the wing left the fuselage one time and just heard this pop, and that was it. It sheared the wing bolts off. The fuselage proceeds to lawn dart at 100-some-odd miles an hour, and it hit hard enough that it shortened a 4S 2200 by an inch and a half.
Wow.
and there was just an explosion of foam when it happened. And of course, it's dead quiet because everybody's sitting there. What's this guy's reaction going to be? Is he going to flip out? Is he going to cry? Is he going to be mad? Or what? And I'm just kind of sitting there going, eh, that sucked. Hadn't said anything yet. Terry was flying at the time, and the first person to say anything is Terry. He's down the flight line a ways, and I hear him down there. I'll paraphrase a little bit. He said, gosh dang it, if you're going to do that, at least wait till I'm not flying so I can watch it happen. It's like, thanks, buddy. So,
yeah, you know, I always love a good story with a plane crash. You know, I don't know, something about it just makes me happy.
Yeah, then you would enjoy my Trojan story.
Oh, boy, the Trojan story.
Yeah, you guys all know there's no hobby shop around here, so I had to improvise, and I bought the standard metal bullet connectors that Radio Shack sells, not gold-plated. Well, unbeknownst to me, inside they were corroded, so that's why I got the brownout on my orange receiver. That's the only time I ever had an issue with a brownout on an orange RX. And I'm flying my Trojan. I have a 800-millimeter orange and white Trojan nitro planes. Love it. It's flying beautiful, doing great. I mean, this thing on a 3S, I can go vertical forever. Flying, all of a sudden, no control whatsoever. And I'm watching the plane just go farther and farther and farther away from me. And then I just watch it nose in on top of the local college about a half a mile away from me.
Nice.
So we go, me, my wife, my two kids, we go running across the park, down the hill, across the creek, into the college, searching everywhere for this plane. Nowhere to be found. So I start walking a distance in the little park area of the college itself, and I look up and I see the vertical stabilizer of my Trojan on top of the main building of the college, three stories up. So we spent like the next hour trying to find an access to the roof. The college was out. It was a Sunday. But the doors were open. So we're like on the third floor in the gymnasium trying to get roof access illegally, might I add. Finally, there's a sports coach down there. What are you guys doing? And we explained it to him. And he actually called. So he's like, I can't help you. You guys got to leave. So as we're leaving, we see a state trooper coming up through the college. So we wave him down. And, I mean, this guy, he was the nicest guy, Missouri State Trooper. And he's like, I've never in all my years had a call like this. He goes, I can't help you because it's on the college, but let me go ahead and radio college security and this and that. The poor college security guy comes. He had to literally go like three blocks into the other entrance of the building and maze and circle his way and snake his way around to get up to roof access, and then had to walk from one end of the roof, which again was another two blocks, to the other end of where my plane was. And here he is with the canopy and the plane, bringing it down. And the plane was pretty much still functioning. And he's like, here you go. Just so you know, I've walked more in this last 5 minutes than I have in my entire shifts, all my shifts in the last month. He gives my plane back. It still functions, but the battery was smoked. One of the cells was bad, but it was still actually, the control surfaces were still moving and everything else. And the only reason I actually found the plane was I was able to hear the servos while I was on the ground. I heard the servos where they were coming from, and that's how I knew it was up on the roof originally.
Yeah, well, I had the same experience with having to move everything around and, you know, throttle everything up to find it down 21. It was horrible. When I first started doing FPV with my big flying wings, I went too far out of my range for my receiver, and it just went down into a huge canyon with trees everywhere. I don't know if you saw the video. I lifted in the video of the crash and ended up having to hike up in there, and it was so thick and all that to even find it. You couldn't even see it, and I just had to sit there and, you know, kept throttling up and finally heard it, and I was like, oh wow. And then I got down into there where it was, and if I wouldn't have been able to hear it, I would have never been able to find it. It was in there so deep and so thick.
Yeah, you gotta love the server. It always helps when you can't find a plane. That's
yeah, and I never thought would have thought about it either. My friend was telling me, "Well, start moving the controls around." All right, hey, I hear something.
Yep, but yeah, I have to thank, the reason I brought that up is I like to thank the Truman College Campus Police and the Missouri State Police for their kind, courteous help in recovering my plane. My main concern was if the LiPo had actually punctured, it was on top of a tar roof. And I didn't want to be responsible for burning down, like, most of the college and the gymnasium and everything else. So...
I actually had a cell and a LiPo go up in flames in my hand last spring.
Really?
I was up to Richland, Washington over Memorial Day, the Wings for Wishes fun fly, and a guy crashed, I think it was an extra, was using a 5 or 6 cell, 4,000, 5,000 size battery. He crashed, and it punctured one of the cells when it hit. So immediately, here comes the giant cloud of smoke, and we go running out there. And okay, it's all right. No more fire, whatever. And we hauled this plane wreckage back, and one of the guys came walking by and said, "Oh, you need to take that battery and soak it in salt water to discharge it." And I've actually done that myself to prove that it doesn't work. And what will happen is it corrodes the tabs off the cells, and you will read zero voltage at the discharge lead and zero voltage at the balance tap, and the cells can still be almost fully charged. The tabs will corrode off of them that fast.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of doing that before. I've heard of the puncturing it with a nail.
The salt water thing is actually on Thunder Power's website, and I followed their instructions to the letter and pulled the battery out after 2 weeks and shows zero voltage at the discharge lead, zero voltage at the balance taps, and one of the cells was at 3.75 volts after 2 weeks in the salt water.
Wow. That's scary.
But anyway, back to the story. I picked this battery up to explain to the guy why the saltwater thing doesn't work. Had it in my hand, and I'm pointing out the tabs, explaining to him how it would corrode the tabs off, and the battery would appear dead, but it may not be. And right as I was explaining that to him, another cell popped.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, it sounded like a gunshot going off in my hand, and I wish somebody would have had it on video. The look on my face and seeing me hurl this battery probably 50 yards out across the parking lot. I didn't want any more of it.
Now I can imagine.
Talk about people playing hot potato. I was playing hot lipo that day.
Yeah, that's scary.
Does anybody know the long-term effects from inhaling lithium polymer fumes?
I don't know.
I had a one cell go my Trojan, my Ultramicro Trojan, and it popped. And I went over to the plane and went to pick it up. And as soon as I picked the plane up, it just popped and puffed. And I just inhaled all whatever amount is inside that battery. I took it all into my nose and mouth and inhaled it all. And I tell you what, it does not taste or smell good.
No, it doesn't. I've destroyed a few lipos that way. That 4S2200 I shortened by an inch and a half, though. Amazingly enough, I mean, it punctured all the cells. And it didn't smoke. It didn't go up in flames. It didn't do anything. It was unreal.
Wow. Wow. Maybe that explains some of the problems I have with my anger issues.
Too much life.
From inhaling. Yeah. Or maybe it causes my heartburn. Who knows?
Yeah, or your high cholesterol, high blood pressure.
Yep.
I know people talk bad about President Obama, and you get all upset when they do, so...
He is the farthest from my mind until just now, Hans.
Yeah, we better leave politics out of this, probably.
Yeah, I could go on for days.
Yeah.
I'll behave.
So let's get into that review of your micro quadcopter that you bought, and let's hear a little bit about it, where you got it, and how much you paid, and that kind of stuff.
I'm
interested in these little quadcopters, and I know a lot of people are interested in them, and they show.
Well, I'm really interested in why he was so excited about the ladybug canopy. That's what I want to hear.
Yes.
It's different.
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, I heard about the micro quads. The RC Today show was talking about them, and Chris posted a video of him flying one of them. I thought, well, for $50, I'll give it a shot. So MassiveRC.com is who sells these. I got the quadcopter. It comes with three spare sets of blades, two lipos, and the transmitter. I think that's everything, and it's $50 for the whole works. And I thought, well, for $50, I'll give it a shot. If it sucks, I'm not out that much. If it flies good, great. So I got it, and... I think Mike's already seen the video. I haven't showed it to many people. I took off the first flight, and it's really stable. Flies great, and just flew it around, kind of taking it easy. The second flight, the transmitter has five different rate settings. It goes in steps of 20%, from 20 to 100%, and you click it into the 100% mode, and the LED on the transmitter changes from blue to an amber color so that you know you're in 100% mode. And you can just sit there and bang the stick to the stops, aileron, elevator, either one, and it'll just sit there and flip over and over and over.
I did
see the video. I got to interject here for a minute, though. So it's warning you that orange color is bad or craziness.
It's warning you that I'm orange. It's in hang on to your shorts mode, because you get past about half stick and it just starts flipping right there.
Really?
I shot some more video of it. I need to get it edited up. Sitting on the couch, taking the quadcopter in my hand, inverted, throwing it halfway across my living room, hitting the throttle, and it'd snap level and just sit there and hover.
So that's my thing that I'm concerned about is, you know, since I do fly helis and I do fly collective pitch helis, obviously these little micros are not collective pitch. I'm afraid that, you know, I'm going to go to roll it, and I'm going to give it negative pitch on the collective, and it's going to go straight down.
It rolls so fast that you literally couldn't go to negative or chop the throttle, is basically what you would be doing. So.
Gotcha.
So I don't think you would have a problem with it. It's the best $50 I've spent on RC stuff in a long, long time. I'm really impressed with it.
Now, does it have enough lift to put one of those little keychain cameras on it?
I haven't tried that yet. It's so small. It's probably 4 inches across the rotors, I'm guessing. One of the 808 keychain cameras, Massive RC sells them now too. If you stripped the case off of it, took the lipo that is attached to the camera, got rid of it, and powered it off of the flight battery for the quad. It might pick it up and fly it around that way. I don't know, to be honest with you.
Yeah, okay. And we were talking about that the other day, the size comparison to the MQX, and it seems like it's quite a bit smaller than the MQX. And the MQX is, we figured the rotor to rotor was about, 6 inches or so?
Yeah, I think this is about 4. It's closer to, like, the Traxxas or... What's the one that Tower Hobbies has?
Walkera? The little Walkera?
No, the new Helimax. The new little Helimax guy?
Yeah, no, the 1SQ.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Yep. It's more their size than MQX. The props on this one are direct drive versus geared like they are on the QX.
So what brand is this?
Brent,
what's the website again? I'll look it up right here.
It is massiverc.com. WL Toys, I believe, is the company that's making them.
And they're sold out of the States, right?
Yeah, MassiveRC is in Florida. I ordered them on Friday, and I had them in on Thursday. So.
Nice.
Yeah, really fast shipping, real easy to deal with.
Quadcopters, let's see what we got here.
It's the V202 Scorpion is the one that I've got.
Okay, Scorpion, there we go. Hubsan, that's who makes it, Hubsan.
Gotcha.
I switched from the... I haven't even flown it with the Scorpion canopy on it.
You're going to fly with the Ladybug?
Yeah, I fly with the Ladybug because they said the Scorpion canopy weighs twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
I fly a lot better with the Ladybug canopy, so.
Gotcha.
But, says it has 6-axis stabilization on it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, the little Helimax I got from Tower, my MD530, it only has 3-axis. This one here has 6, and I paid twice as much.
Yeah, but overall, I'm really impressed. I didn't expect much for $50, and it's great.
So, for somebody looking to get into bigger quadcopters, you think these would be good for a trainer, a good first step, or are they too fast and too twitchy?
No, they'd be great. Being able to change the rates on the radio. 20% is so slow, you almost can't fly it, but at 40%, it'd be really gentle, real easy to fly. I've been flying around my living room with 60 or 80%. Then when I want to flip, do stuff like that, I just switch in 100% mode, and you can sit there and do flip for another, you get bored, basically. I had it doing a halfway funnel in my living room earlier.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah, I look forward to seeing some more videos. I did see that first one where you're flipping it around, and it flips really fast. It's crazy. I couldn't believe it. The MQX doesn't flip that fast. I've flown the MQX a few times and seen it flip, and you've got to get some height, and it loses a lot of elevation when you're doing it.
Yeah, I've been practicing with it a little bit. I haven't flown quads very much, but if you give it a little bit of throttle at the same time you do the flip, you can do it almost stationary if you time it right.
Yeah. And it does come with the radio. Is it 2.4 gigahertz?
It's 2.4. It looks like a baby 11-inch. It's black.
And how do you like the radio? How's it feel and all that?
It's your basic cheap radio. I mean, it works fine, and it's not my 9503 by any stretch of the imagination, but what do you expect for $50, you know? I mean, it's...
Yeah. And it's basically a throwaway radio, right? It's only going to be good for that quadcopter.
Yeah, it's only good for that quadcopter. There's somebody somewhere came up with a, you can replace the control board in them and they will actually bind to a DSM radio. And I went looking around for those a little bit and seen the price, and they wanted more for the board than the entire quadcopter cost originally.
Yeah.
Guys, if you did it for $10 or something, I might think about it, but for $50, no, I'll fly with the toy radio.
Yeah.
Now my question is, does it have Expo?
No, it doesn't. Well,
oh, no.
With the way the you can change the rates on it, I guess it kind of does have Expo, from going from 20 to 40 to 50 or whatever. It gets more sensitive, so.
So what about altitude hold and rate mode and that kind of stuff? Does it do any of that, or is it just always in like a rate mode or a holding mode?
It doesn't do any of that stuff as far as I know. I mean, I know it doesn't have altitude hold. It's probably rate mode all the time, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It's a little slow on the lower settings, especially the yaw rate is kind of slow on it. So figuring out how to get it into a funnel was kind of interesting. You've got to hit almost full rudder and then in enough aileron to keep it going the direction that you want.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to see that video of that quadcopter in a funnel. That would definitely be interesting.
Yeah, I'll try and get some more video of it shot tonight. Keep from ricocheting off the TV and the couch and the kids and whatever else happens to be around.
That's the cool thing about this thing with it being wintertime. You know, you can be flying it inside your house.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of batteries does it? I'm looking at the website here and I see two different batteries. I got the Helimax from Tower, and it uses a proprietary 1S battery that has its own style connector and USB charger. Can you get other batteries, or do you have to buy the specific battery for that helicopter?
It uses a 1S300, and look at their website. They actually have some nanotech batteries on there that have that same connector.
That's okay. I'm looking at it now.
And I'm not sure if that is the same connector as like Helimax or any of the others use. I haven't ever at any of those.
No, hands. It's completely opposite from a Helimax, but it almost looks like the body connector from an Ultramicro, Horizon Hobby Ultramicro.
It's different than that. It has flanges on the side of it where the Horizon connectors don't.
Okay. So you still have to use a proprietary connector, though.
Yeah, it's their own connector. I guess if it wanted to, you could put some STs on it or something like that, but
Hans, you're breaking up a little bit.
Huh?
You're breaking up a little bit.
That's weird. Anyway, I guess you could swap connectors if a guy really wanted to, but I'll fly it like it came.
Oh, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just I was wondering, because I know a lot of the smaller helicopters have their proprietary connectors, whereas if you go with the Horizon ones, they're pretty much all the 1S, the standard 1S connector.
Well,
and that's why I was just wondering.
But see, even those are different because the MCPX and the Nano use a different connector.
Oh, do they? Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, the Nano uses the small connector, and the MCPX uses a bigger one.
I think the industry in general needs to come up with a standard for batteries and even radio frequencies, where you should be able to not have to get in any link. You should be able to, if it's a 2.4 gigahertz, there should be a setting on all radios where a Futaba should be able to work with a Spectrum. A nanotech battery should be able to work with any vehicle that takes a 1S. You know, they should come up with a standard to make it easier. Like, I have 25 1S batteries for my Ultra Micros, and they will only work in my Polecat, and they will work in my Tower little micros, my little, my SC5A. It should be where they should all have a standard where if your one battery should fit anything that's that size. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I do. And my batteries for my bigger stuff, I mean, I've got anywhere from 2S, 360s up to 6S, 5000s. And everything has Dean's connectors on it just for that reason.
You're even running Dean's connectors?
What, Mike?
You're even running Dean's connectors on your 6L batteries?
Yeah.
Isn't that too much amps to those?
It depends on how big a load you're putting on them. They can only take about 60 amps. The high amp 6L stuff I've got, I actually use 6mm bullets on.
Okay.
Because I'm pulling 100 amps in the air with those.
Yeah, same here. I'm pulling more than that on my Goblin, and I'm running EC5s on my 12S setup.
Yeah, you'd have horrific voltage drop across a Dean's on something like that.
Yeah.
If the connectors didn't vaporize.
Yeah, it'd probably melt them. I've heard of people melting them too.
See, that's my problem. If God came down himself and said, I need you to solder this connector on, I probably wouldn't do it. I probably couldn't do it.
Really?
And that's where I cannot solder to save my life. I cannot do it. I mean, and that's where I think for guys getting into the hobby, they should have a standard for, like, up to 3S. It should be this type of connector. Every plane should have this connector. Every battery should have this connector. Then once you get to the higher amperage, it should be this connector. 1S should all be standard. That way, it makes it more accessible to guys. Say a guy starts out with an Ultra Micro Polecat, and then he wants to get a Micro Heli. He should be able, if he has those batteries, he should be able to use them, not have to invest more into a different charger, different connectors, different batteries. They should try to work together as opposed to working against the industry in general, is what I think.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I hate soldering. And whenever, like, these new Pulse batteries that I've been ordering, they come without connectors. So you have to put on your connectors. And I mean, I got good at soldering Deans. Deans are easy to solder. And I switched over to EC5s, and, man, it's just a whole new learning curve. It's like, how am I going to get this soldered into here? It took me a few tries to get it down and without bleeding over the solder onto the bullet connector, because then you can't get the case on it. So it just took a few tries.
Or bleeding the solder onto your leg or onto your hand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I burn myself every time. Or, you know, you're holding the wire and you're trying to sit there and solder, and it's like, come on, cool down, and you're burning your fingers trying to hold this wire on. It's like, I need one of those stupid, you know, soldering stations to hold everything with the little tweezers and all that.
What you need to do, go down to Harbor Freight. They have a Helping Hands thing that's like $10.
Yeah.
That works great. That's what I use. You guys talk about hating soldering. I sat down, it's been a while back, but I cut the connectors off the old batteries, or cut the old connectors off, cut the shrink tube, soldered Deans on, heat shrunk everything, and I did 14 batteries in 30 minutes.
Nice.
But I've soldered a million of them. I can do it really fast now.
Yeah, and you've probably got a decent soldering iron, too. I've just got the cheap, you know, $20 one from the hobby shop. The orange one.
Yeah, I've got one of the...
orange one.
I have one of the Radio Shack digital soldering stations. It has a LCD readout on it. You can see exactly what the temperature is. Like that plane that I sent Dwayne, you can turn the temperature from 300 to I think 800 degrees. And wow. I've got a setting marked on it that's just right for melding EPP foam, and I've got a chisel tip. So what I do is like, okay, well, I need to cut a couple of slots for the spars, so I put it on my EPP setting, put the chisel tip on it, turn it on, and it's just the right temperature to meld EPP. Throw the ruler on the foam and run down along the straight edge and cut the hole for the spars. Works great. And a regular soldering iron, you're way too hot to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I got one of the Radio Shack ones that has, like, where you can put the X-Acto blade in there, too, also, and use it to cut foam and things like that. But I know what you're talking about where it gets too hot. I've melted the casing along the wires when I was trying to put connectors on, and... Yeah, I'm just not a solderer.
and I did a ton of it in high school, like circuit level stuff, building stuff in computer class. So I've had a little more experience, and that helps a lot.
Well, how old are you?
36.
Oh, wow, okay. You're a little younger than me.
Yeah, I'm not too old yet, I guess.
35, though, that's when you start going downhill.
Oh, man, don't say that. I'm turning 35 in July.
That's when it starts, man. I'm telling you, that's when it started for me. You start noticing the creaks and the aches and the pains you never had.
Yeah, I've been, my job, the wintertime, I'm really slow. Sit around, build airplanes is about all I do, and I got up today and I was like, man, my back hurts so bad. I need to go back to work. Because if I sit around, my back starts killing me after
a
while.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Welcome aboard, Mike.
Great. So, is that about it?
Good for me.
I don't have anything to add unless you had any questions.
I do one thing. I have one thing. I want to thank you both you gentlemen, for the opportunity for this. I truly enjoyed it. I'm glad I got to get out there and get some more information about me, and you guys can see that I'm not the insane person through my typing.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
I like your page. It's interesting.
You like my group. You like my private group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got complaints from a lot of friends about the things I'd post on my own personal page, so that's why I made the group. That way I stopped posting the bacon and the other things, the BBS. I stopped posting the BBSs. There you go, Michael. I made a comment on the BBS on my own personal page.
Yeah, I'm sure that he'll be happy to hear that one.
Yeah, shout out to Michael, BBS.
Nope.
And they didn't even have to use it to calm me down. Look at that. I stayed gentlemanly and professional the whole entire time.
Yeah,
Proud of myself.
Yep, it was great. I hope that the podcast really takes off, and I hope that people will get interested in it and want to come on the show and just come on BS with us and hang out and talk about flying stuff, even if it is a plank.
Last thing I want to point out, guys, if you're listening, this is our first cast. We've had some little technical difficulties as far as some equipment and stuff. We promise to have that fixed on the next one, so don't let that be a turnoff as far as quality if it does show up as an issue.
Yeah, exactly. It's our first time. We have no clue what we're doing. It can only get better, I hope.
Well, yeah.
So, cool. Well, thanks, Hans, for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was fun.
And post up those videos for everybody to so they can see you flying that little quadcopter around and flipping it around everywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to edit up some more video tonight, hopefully, and get that posted.
And by, by the end of the month, I'll have a full review on my Orange Crush.
Yeah, we definitely need to come up with a name for that radio, because it's probably going to be talked about a lot on the show, so we're going to have to name it something.
Yeah, I actually have some video. I gotta try to start editing video, because I have video of it, and it does show up pretty nice and glowing in my hands on a cloudy day. So.
Nice.
So I want to thank you again, and I had a blast.
Yeah, thanks again, guys.